Hey everyone, happy Friday. This week we have an edition with some economic news about the long-term prospects of Southern Europe, political news with attempts of European countries to contain the radical right, and an attempt to pass blasphemy laws in European countries. Finally, we'll be looking into the archaeological origin of Greek mythical heroes in our paper of the week. So, let's get into it. These past couple of months, we've seen many stories of the economic prowess of Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. And it's true that they all saw impressive economic growth in the last 5 years, while many European economies, including Germany and France, slumped or even declined. Less than a decade ago, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain were derogatorily called the pigs for their high debt and weak growth. So, how did they turn this around? Well, the 2008 to 2014 financial and debt crisis hit Southern Europe the hardest. High budget deficits and massive borrowing led to soaring debt. Unable to repay their debt and stabilize their economies, the EU and IMF even gave financial bailouts to Spain, Portugal, and Greece. On one condition, austerity. These countries had to reform their economies and drastically cut public spending. That austerity led to a lost decade of growth. Italy, for example, underperformed the EU average from 2008 to 2020. But this went hand in hand with reforms to boost competitiveness. And patience and hard work have paid off. Indicators tell the story of an impressive recovery. Growth and growth per capita bounced back above the Eurozone average. Tax reforms increased revenue and reduced fiscal deficit. Bond yields on 10-year debt edged closer to Germany, showing renewed investor trust. And productivity in Spain, Portugal, and Greece actually rose faster than that of the EU average. But this hasn't only been due to their good policies. Southern European countries recovered quickly from COVID because tourism has bounced back faster than industry. In other words, they're doing better than badly performing countries. Spain and Portugal were also impacted less by the war in Ukraine as they depended much less on Russian gas. And public investment increased massively, partly due to the EU recovery funds, with Spain and Italy receiving 350 billion euros. And this economic growth has finally allowed Southern Europe to fix its public finances and reduce its debt. While some of the numbers look good on paper, at least for now, could prosperity for citizens be just around the corner? Well, when it comes to real incomes, they are climbing back up, though they haven't caught up with the pre-financial crisis levels yet, and Italy has been relatively stagnant. Southern Europe continues to suffer from a brain drain, with many of its young moving to Northern Europe in search of economic opportunity and jobs. It's hard to build a high productivity economy if all of your top talent is leaving, though it does seem that this is shifting a little bit. In the cases of Portugal, Greece, and Spain, they have actually managed to reverse their population hemorrhage. In 2023, all three of them had net positive immigration of their citizens. While in Greece this is driven primarily by citizens coming home, in Spain and Portugal, we can suspect that this is from South American immigrants with European passports. Despite short-term improvements, many problems of those countries are simply not going away. Debt, especially in Greece and Italy, is way higher than the EU average, as is unemployment. And the demographic situation of those countries looks far worse, with some of the lowest birth rates in the continent. And so for all their recent economic success, it means they risk being stuck in Europe's middle income trap. Good enough not to be a complete economic basket case, but not experiencing the high productivity frontier growth of their Northern European counterparts. But let's be honest, with an aging population, achieving even economic stagnation might already be a victory. Whether you call it the populist right, the far right, or the radical right, for decades mainstream parties have tried to contain any right-of-center political party. But despite this strategy, Europe's far right is more powerful than ever. They're winning elections, hold more seats in parliaments, and are in more governments than ever before, shifting Europe's political landscape. So how have countries tried to stop the far-right trend, and what has that meant for their national politics? Well, European political parties have chosen between three main strategies, with different results in each country. First is Denmark, where the country's main political parties decided to take the wind out of the far-right sails. Led by the Social Democrats, Denmark adopted policies on migration and social welfare, like stricter asylum rules and integration requirements. This removed issues for the far right to capitalize on, reducing their vote to just 2.6% in 2022, down from 21% in 2015. In other countries like the Netherlands, Sweden, and Austria, centrist and right-wing parties have joined forces with far-right groups in coalition or minority governments. In the case of Austria, this actually limited the far right for nearly two decades because making concessions in coalitions is highly unpopular for anti-establishment voters. While the FPÖ joined a coalition with the Christian Democrats in the 2000s after winning 27% of the vote, by the next elections that voter share fell back to 10% as voters switched support. But in other cases, cooperating boosted the far-right's profile. In Sweden, when parties dropped the cordon sanitaire and joined an electoral coalition, the Sweden Democrats won 20.5% of the vote and now support a right-wing minority government. Similarly, in the Netherlands, Geert Wilders' PVV won a quarter of the seats in 2023 and joined a right-wing government. The third strategy has been to maintain the firewall or cordon sanitaire to prevent the far-right from power and refusing cooperation. German parties refuse to collaborate with the AfD in policy or to allow it to enter certain committees in the German National Assembly, while in France, parties from the far left to the center-right made an electoral alliance to prevent Le Pen's Rassemblement National from gaining a majority last year. But this approach can backfire. Governments made up of the left and center-right often leave concerns on crucial topics like immigration unanswered. This makes large parts of voters feel ignored and fuels further far-right support. In fact, in Germany, the AfD leads the polls for the first time after upcoming Chancellor Friedrich Merz teamed up with the SDP and backtracked on his promises to bring migration to a halt. So, what's the solution? Well, it might be less about politics and more about actually doing what the people want. Far-right support has grown for the past 1 year because people are dissatisfied with politics and feel that issues such as migration, identity, and crime are being ignored. And if governments ignore these problems, then politics will keep shifting right. No matter the political strategy, popular policies on these issues will eventually be approved. The only real way to contain the far-right would be to actually deal with issues that voters care about. European countries are reintroducing blasphemy laws under the pressure of their Muslim populations. While blasphemy laws never fully went away in European countries, back in the 2010s, with growing secularization, the trend was going the other way. But with pressure from Europe's Muslims who react violently to perceived insults to Islam, both domestically and abroad, European blasphemy laws are making a comeback. The criminalization of insults to religion is coming back in three main ways. The first type of law is about the simple desecration of religious symbols, something that Denmark did with the Quran burnings in 2023, just 6 years after it had initially revoked blasphemy laws. The second way is through attempts to tackle hate speech and preserve public peace, like with Scotland's 2024 hate speech law, but these laws tend to be quite vague. The UK has even looked into a much more widespread version of blasphemy laws with its attempt to define Islamophobia, which if we apply the Labour Party's definition would turn criticism of Islam into the equivalent of racial hatred. Even secular bulwark France has looked into it under the impulse of the far-left La France Insoumise, which aims to look at the role of media, politicians and social media in the creation of negative stereotypes on Islam and its practitioners. And finally, the third type of blasphemy law is through what I would call Islamic street justice, where critics of Islam who are seen as blasphemous are simply killed in terrorist attacks or hit jobs. This was the case of the Charlie Hebdo attacks, several school teachers in France, but also more recently with anti-Islam activist and serial Quran burner Salwan Momika, who was shot dead in Sweden. While these laws aim to promote social peace, which, let's be honest, burning religious books doesn't help with, there is a problem. Free speech restrictions are often weaponized by the most militant groups or individuals. In the case of Europe's Muslims, it's fair to say it has also been used to suppress criticism of certain religious behaviors, practices, or beliefs. Blasphemy laws could also pose a threat to European democracies. While European countries crack down, for example, on certain groups on the right, if it passes blasphemy laws, it risks disarming itself from tackling some of the anti-democratic ideas pushed by Islam. This is not a hypothetical question. Many young European Muslims want Sharia and a theocratic state, opinions that would likely be much harder to criticize under blasphemy laws. But with a growing Muslim population, it's safe to say the pressure to pass blasphemy laws will only grow. And now for our weekly brief. In weather news, severe droughts across Europe are slashing water levels, leaving farmers struggling with reduced crop yields. The European Drought Observatory places much of northern and eastern Europe in the warning category, while southeast Spain is already on a red alert. In trade news, Chinese exports to the EU increased by 10% in March compared to last year. Just last week, the EU warned that US tariffs might push even more overproduced Chinese goods into Europe. Meanwhile, EU exports to China dropped by 7.5%, increasing the EU's trade deficit. In industry news, German industry lost about 120,000 jobs in 2024, according to the country's employment agency. Small and medium-sized businesses were hit the hardest. Employment in industry has decreased every single month since August 2023. In more industry news, the UK is taking control of British Steel to keep its last two steel plants open. The Scunthorpe plant might soon be fully nationalized. Its future was in danger when its Chinese owners said that it would close, ending UK domestic steel production. The plant, which was built in the 1970s, is unlikely to be profitable without extensive modernization. In digital news, the EU will start testing its own age verification app, aiming to stop children from seeing adult content online. Big websites must have strong age checks under EU law. While the EU promises that users can prove they are adults without sharing personal details, privacy concerns still remain. In Hungary, the parliament adopted a law limiting LGBT rights. The law bans LGBT people from organizing public events and say people can only be male or female, not recognizing any other gender identities. It comes after Germany's new coalition said the EU should cut Hungary's funds and voting rights. In migration news, the EU has created a list of safe countries to speed up asylum decisions for those countries' nationals. The list includes EU candidate countries as well as Bangladesh, Colombia, Egypt, India, Kosovo, Morocco, and Tunisia. In religious news, the EU has spent 10 million euros on a research project called the European Quran, one of its biggest science grants. The study looks into how the Quran influenced European culture and religion between the 12th and 19th century. They claim that the Quran was important for Europe's religious diversity, even though Christianity and Judaism were the main religions in European history, and Europeans actively fought against the spread of Islam to the continent for centuries. In demographic news, a survey shows that 41% of students in Vienna's elementary and secondary schools follow Islam, up from 39.4% last year. Christian and non-religious students made up 34.5% and 23% of students respectively. In diplomatic news, the European Commission is giving burner phones to its staff traveling to the United States because of spying risks, according to the Financial Times. Similar safety rules already apply for China and Ukraine. In our paper of the week, we have a study into the archaeological origin of Greek myths, inspired by the book The First Fossil Hunters, written by Adrian Mayer. Back in the 7th and 5th century BC, Greek city-states scrambled to find giant bones which they said belonged to mythical heroes. Since many of these finds occurred in sites that were confirmed by modern paleontologists to have a lot of fossils, the bones of heroes were likely the fossilized remains of various extinct species. And it's even possible that ancient bones have been the origin of many mythical creatures. Cyclops may have been the result of mammoth skulls encountered in Mediterranean islands, whose huge nasal cavity might have been mistaken for an eye socket. Though this is still speculation. Anyways, that was it for this week. If you like this video, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe for the latest updates and analysis on European news. I'll see you in the next episode.